My name's Erin, and I'm the assistant for all of the Discovering Buddhism modules. So we do 13 different Discovering Buddhism modules, and then we start all over at the beginning and do the same 13 over and over until it finally sinks in. So I've been here. This is our 11th module for this kind of series, and then we'll do 12 and 13, and we'll start over. So this is a little bit down the ways. If you're brand new, if you've been with us since the beginning, yay, we're getting towards the end. I'll just throw this out there. At the great idea of one of the students who's been around a long time, we're going to celebrate at the end of our 13th module in October. If you've done any one of these modules, we're going to celebrate. This is the handout that I give every time with different information on it, depending on what the course is. So where it says on our Kadampa Center website, here's where you go for these readings. That's also this Discovering Buddhism materials. That's where I put anything that like might come up in class that's like a reference or a link or whatever, or homework. Oh, it's always there. So if you get used to going to that place, you can pretty much find everything and make sure it's online for people who are streaming. Go to Beginner Programs, Discovering Buddhism Material. This handout is there, and that's where we keep adding stuff. So this tells you the readings in the books for this class. There are three books listed because FPMT has multiple books, but the one I believe Hemant's going to talk about the most is the first one there, How to See Yourself as You Really Are by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. That's available in our bookstore, and we have a bookstore volunteer kindly here offering his time to help you check out if you would like that book. The readings are all PDF. They're all free. You can read those along with the course. So class, homework, readings, books, all available for all of us here are together. And then there's a little bit more information on here, too. If you're taking this, writing everything down, taking it seriously, want to check a bunch of boxes and get stuff, certificates and things like that, you know, keep reading and diving in. But if it's your first time here, don't worry about that quite yet, probably. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Erin. So before we get going, I'd like to do quick introductions of everyone. So if you are new, please let us do three things. Your name, if you're new, and probably one line on why are you here today. Okay? So we can start with you.
Yeah, I'm Carol.
We might need to pass around.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just blank noise for people.
Real short.
Okay. Hi, my name is Carol, and this is my second round of discovering Buddhism. Slowly, it's starting to sink in.
Hi, I'm Janice. We've taken two courses here, and we wanted to see what this one was like.
Okay. And I'm Brian.
Hey, I'm Kevin. Second time around the wheel here, and hoping it'll sink in a bit more. This is a great topic.
Hi, I'm Sheila. This is my first time at a center and in a course, and I am looking to kind of understand myself and my place in the world.
Wonderful.
I'm Chase. This will be, I'm kind of like one and a half times through the series, and I'm really looking forward to the class.
Hey, Chuck, I don't know how many times I've done this. Hoping to pick up a little bit more. I pick up more and more each time.
Hello, I'm Greg. I've been coming to Buddhism for a while. This is, I think, the 8th module that I've been to because I didn't start back until a little partway through the modules. I find it helpful.
My name's Anne, and I've probably been 8. I don't know how many. But as many as possible, and it's always enlightening.
My name is Manpreet, and
I'm very interested in these topics. Hopefully we can discuss. Yeah, sure. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Dan. I've been in and out of modules. Hopefully one day I would have done them all.
Good, wonderful. Everybody knows Chris. He's part of Kadampa Center Walls.
Yeah.
Him and Brian.
And I'm Jack.
Jack.
Chris is part of our amazing media team that makes this available, Chris and Brian, to everybody who's streaming or if you miss a class.
I'm Rob. This is my first time here, and I'm just learning to, or looking to learn more about this particular topic and Buddhism in general.
Lindsay, also my first time here, and just interested to learn more.
I'm Matt. This is my first Discovering Buddhism class, just trying to add more structure to my practice.
Good.
My name's Celeste. This is my first time here ever, and I'm a sponge looking to learn anything.
Hi, I'm Kurt. I've taken a meditation, a few other classes. I'm looking to learn more.
Thank you.
I'm Anna. I want to know everything there is about emptiness, about bodhicitta, about karma, etc., 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 how my mind works, because Buddhism is actually about your own mind. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Patty, and I took this class about 10 years ago, and am hoping that this time a little more might sink in.
Hi, my name is Guillermo. This is my first round in this lifetime. I don't remember.
Okay. My name is Ben. This is my first time here. I just got back a few weeks ago from I went on a retreat for my birthday, and it turned out it was a Buddhist Lam Rim retreat, which I didn't really know before I went on it. And so I'm just looking to continue the study that I began there.
I'm Gary, and I'm one of the ones that's coming down the home stretch of the first time through this. And probably this time next year, I'll be Ann saying, this is my second time through this, as I strip mine into understanding what's going on.
Adriana. Yeah. Hi, my name is Adriana, and I'm taking this for the first time this series, and the purpose is to have a positive impact in other people's lives.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Oh, we have some more people. Yeah, I forgot.
I'm Jennifer, and I switched from coming on Sundays to coming to DB with you guys, and I think this is my third full module. Like, kind of dabbled, so I'm hoping to be like Ann and Chuck and be here like a few more times and keep soaking things in.
Hi, my name is Emily. I was here maybe a little less than a year ago, and then I got really sick and I had to stop, and I've recently been starting to recover, and then I got lucky because I remembered you guys and then looked at the website and thought, oh, I could start up again.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
My name is Sandy. I first came to Kadampa Center like in the year 2000 when you were in the other building. And I was really into it for a while and then moved and did jobs and just haven't been coming consistently. But I did a couple of the modules way back when. And I think I did this one way, way, way back when. But I feel like I'm starting over again.
Wonderful, wonderful.
But here I am.
My name is Yesenia, and I am Ben's wife. Ben is over there. And he's very excited, so I'm excited.
Oh, how nice. Well, thank you so much, guys. And the reason I asked for this introduction is to kind of gauge who's new for the first time. And there are some people who are stalwarts. They've gone through cyclic existence in Kadampa Center. So then I can cater to that kind of discussion because, you know, this is a advanced level course. And some of the words that we use may sound like a jargon. So what I'm going to do is simplify a little bit for you, even introduce a few concepts so you can think about some things that we are talking about. So it's important for me to know, well, you know, how many people have actually gone through this before. All right? So with that said, we always start, if you're new here, we start by doing a little calm abiding meditation. If you've not done that, we'll walk you through it. And it's very short. And the purpose of this meditation is to bring your mind to presence. You have work to do. You came from a job. You're thinking about when is this over so we can get out and grab something. Whatever is going in your mind, this is the time you decided to come here, so we want you to be present here and just give your attention to this moment and for your own mind. So we'll do a quick calm abiding meditation, then we'll go take the next step, okay? So at this point, we want you to do is bring your attention to the present moment, okay? Just be here and settle your mind. Just take some breaths. Now, keep in mind that in Buddhism, we talk about seven postures, sitting posture, and I'll walk you through that. Right now, just kind of keep your eyes slightly closed, relaxed. Keep your back straight. It should be relaxed like a stacked coin, not too tight, not too loose, and not too leaning back, just straight. If you're sitting down on a cushion, you want to go to your Vajra position or what they call lotus position. It's perfectly fine to be on a chair. Just make sure your feet are flat. On the floor, if you need a cushion, certainly you can borrow a cushion. Your arms are held loosely on your lap, resting 2 to 3 inches just below your navel. Your right hand is over your left, and the thumbs are touching each other. The head is slightly inclined forward. Gaze on the floor in front of you. Your jaw and mouth are relaxed. Your teeth slightly apart. Lips lightly touching. Your tongue rests lightly on your upper palate, right behind the front teeth, and your eyes are shut in the beginning and then learn to leave them slightly open when you are able to. And just relax your body. And then scan. Release the tension that you're holding. And then start looking at the cool tingling of your nostrils when you breathe in. Or when you breathe in, you can also see your abdomen going in and out. Just focus on that for a while. If your mind starts to scatter or wander, let it be. Just recognize those thoughts and tell yourself to come back and keep your mind on the breathing. Let's do that for like 2 or 3 minutes. Okay, with your mind a little bit relaxed, we are going to get into what we call motivation. For a moment, collect your thoughts again. This is an opportunity to transform our minds by listening to the most profound subject that Buddha taught, means by which a person can achieve liberation, supreme enlightenment. And regardless of how profound this subject matter is, how blessed the setting is, how capable or incapable the teacher is, whether or not we actually advance ourselves on the path to liberation and enlightenment depends principally on the motivation behind your action. So listening is your initial step to spiritual development. And no matter what form it takes, listening, readings, discussion, even watching His Holiness Dalai Lama's DVD, as we embark on this voyage into the nature of reality, we need many skills. We need to be selective in our reading and listening, sifting out of authentic texts from those which can lead us astray, so an element of discrimination is needed. Perseverance. Since to get to their actual meaning, we will have to study them and listen to the teachings on from qualified teachers again and again. Listening without assimilating what we are listening is useless. So the second step is contemplating. Contemplating is absorbing more deeply whatever we have heard and into our hearts. For instance, hearing that ignorance is a root of samsara will not get us closer to the freedom from suffering unless we apply this knowledge. The key here is to know that contemplation means to investigate what we have heard, to come to know as much as we can about it, and to understand it deeply. Meditation. Only then we are ready to start meditating, which is the third step of understanding. So therefore, focus a bit on your ultimate objective. This is to achieve supreme enlightenment and to benefit each other and every living being. We have found this unique opportunity and have met the teachings of Buddha, who has given us the perfect and complete path. So take advantage of it to achieve a state of enlightenment. And by doing that, we become a perfect cause for happiness of all living beings. It's pretty hard to resist. So try to generate that state of mind. Engage in the effort to achieve that supreme state and imagine that all living beings throughout the universe are in the anticipation of this moment. And by your effort, that or in our effort that we generate now, they're going to get closer to their liberation. Thank you. So for the newcomers, setting a motivation is a very vital part of any teachings or beginning of any meditation session. And just a quick example, if you wanted to get out of that door, you have to have a motivation to get up out of your chair and walk. Otherwise, you don't get out of the door. So if you're truly wanting to learn and understand and have patience with it, then you have to be motivated to do so. So that's why setting a motivation is very powerful. It puts a seed in your mind to then do something. Okay? So I want to start this class by first thanking and giving credits to the teacher. You know, I've learned a little bit from Lamrim, and you should always let people know where these teachings come from. This is not something I made up. This is not something we manufactured. This is authentic teaching, and there are many people involved in giving us these teachings. And all we are doing is translating and just putting it in different ways so that it can be taught in a session like this. So I want to first start with Buddha. Without Buddha, we wouldn't have any of these teachings. Lama Atisha, you see the statue here on my left here. That's Lama Atisha. Lama Tsongkhapa, our lineage teacher, he's also in the back with two students. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Lama Thupten Yeshe, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Kenshu Rinpoche, and our precious teacher, resident teacher, Geshe Gelug. I also like to acknowledge the writings of certain authors that I have used in my own investigation and learning. And one I've used is Geshe Tashi Tsering, Denma Locho Rinpoche, Pabongka Rinpoche from Liberation in Palm of Your Hands. And lastly, I want to also acknowledge Geshe Sangpo. He's our resident teacher. Our venerable nuns, well, you saw one of them here, Discovering Buddhism, and also all the teachers from Discovering Buddhism who've helped me to learn some of these subjects, some senior students who are very knowledgeable, and including all others that continue to support this program, like Aaron. Okay, this doesn't come together just like that. Let's have a class, and there you go. Takes a lot of work. So I want to thank them. Really, thank you. Some of this required reading, and I know that you have a paper that Aaron gave you, but I want to specifically point out the PDF requirements. And I want you to, before we even get going, I really want to emphasize that I got so much out of it. It's not a lot of reading. I actually put it in a small little binder, and you can see all of the readings, every one of those PDFs are in this little binder. It's a little small font, and it does take a little time, but it's not a lot of reading. You'll get so much out of this. Okay? So the way you want to go is, for this week, before you get the books and start to read, and it takes a while, this week, I would like you to at least look at the PDF and start with The Wisdom of Emptiness by Denma Locho Rinpoche. Should not take more than 2 days, but depending on your activities and lifestyle and jobs and all that, it may take a little longer. And if you feel, you can also repeat. And sometimes it's helped me a lot. I go through it once and then I forget what I read, go back to it again. Second one you should read after that, The Two Truths, again by Denma Locho Rinpoche. It's a PDF. The third one is Seeking the Eye by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. And then it follows by Non-Duality by Lama Thupten Yeshe. Then it's a real dense one, Mahamudra by Lama Thupten Yeshe. Very powerful. And then last one, How to Meditate on Emptiness by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. It's very interesting, this How to Meditate on Emptiness. It actually goes through questions and answers from students. He's just asking, so show me such and such, and he will say, where is that person? Do you really see that person? That kind of stuff. So it kind of, it's interesting. It's more, it's not just mundane reading, because some of this subject matter twists your mind a little bit. It's like, whoa, let me go back. What was that? It will do that. But what we'll do today is we start a little simpler. We're going to go into some history. Where does this teaching come from? We'll talk a little bit about Heart Sutra, some legends of Nagarjuna, you heard the name. Who are these people? Why are they important? And the reason for this lineage in Tibetan Buddhism is very important. This is the authoritative teaching. They want you to know there's a lineage teaching. Somebody just didn't sit down and write a discourse and there it is. It's not an interpretation of one person. It comes all the way from Buddha as it is handed out. Okay, so it's important that you know that there is a solid background to this. This is not something that in Kadampa Center, they just read, Google it and find out. Okay, so that's, it's important to know that. We'll learn a little bit about antidote to obstacles to liberation and to realize direct emptiness, direct realization. And then we'll see how we can cultivate it. And that's two meditations at the end. So that's the goal today. Okay, it's a basic class one, just a basic understanding of what is this subject all about. It's an advanced class. If you were to look at Lambrim, which is the entire graduated path to get liberated, and if you're not familiar with it, there is a book. I'll show you. It's called the Extended Lambrim Outline. It's free online also. You can look it up. But after class, if people were not familiar, just come by here, take a look at it. And you can see that when you're looking at, there are three scopes in Buddhism teaching. One is called the small scope, the medium scope, and the great scope. And the reason they do this scope is like when you are in the second grade and third grade, you can't be learning seventh grade, right? And then you get to high school. So they take you through step by step by step till you really understand the entire scope of teaching. That's why they have scopes. Okay? And as you can see, the wisdom of emptiness is in the great scope. So it's a little advanced class, so we'll try to get to some basic stuff so you can understand what this is all about. Any questions so far? Okay, so this course was developed for FPMT in 2001. Some teachers met in Pamina, Italy, and they were discussing what should be taught. So the person that really was charged to put this together for introductory level, he's a scholar for FPMT. He's mastered many texts, and he's learned a lot, and he's a good translator. His name is Thupten Pende. And so I want to also acknowledge that he was given charge to put this kind of program together for DB. Okay? And a lot of the presentations and that he has used are all from our lineage teacher, Lama Tsongkhapa. Okay? So that you should understand that. So the next thing I want to talk about are, we want to keep this jargon down, but there are some things I have to say. You will have to get used to some of these words because that it will make sense to you. Some of the names. So once I said there's no jargon, I'm going to start with some names that are going to throw you off. Now, you don't have to remember them. There are two or three that are very important, and I'll tell you which ones. The first one you need to remember is named Chandrakriti. Just don't worry about the spelling. Chandrakriti. Okay. Then number two is Santideva, and you'll see his book outside. The Guide to Bodhisattva Way of Life, just very powerful. Then the other one you need to remember is Aryadeva. And one of the most important, Nagarjuna, you even heard her say that we're going to go to Nalanda where Nagarjuna taught. So Nagarjuna is important, and we'll let you know why later on. And so, but we are very lucky that many of the scholars from FPMT learned Tibetan and were able to translate a lot of these things into English. So I thank them a lot, really, because if you had to learn this in Sanskrit and all those languages, those words, and in Tibetan, it would be very difficult. So I thank them for that. Okay? All right, so today we'll start with the lineage of the teaching, and the main focus is to really understand where this came from. So let's go back to Shakyamuni Buddha. He carried forward these discourses through Indian pundits like Nagarjuna, that name again comes up, Tibetan scholars like Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and then eventually it comes to FPMT through Thupten Pende, who learned under Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and with their blessing. So you can see it's not diverted. Same things come down all the way. So what you're hearing, unless I paraphrase it, the teaching, the content is authentic. It's authoritative also. Okay, so let's start with Shakyamuni Buddha again. If people don't know a little bit about Shakyamuni Buddha, he was a king, 6th century, 563 BC to 463 BC. He lived for 80 years. At about age 29, he left his palace and he became like a monk. And he just walked around, learned from many teachers. Finally, he found out that there has to be a way to understand what is this all about. He sat under a Bodhi tree, and right before he turned 35, he was enlightened under that tree in Bodh Gaya. He taught, after that, he taught for 40 plus years. Okay? So a lot of these things come from those teachings. His teachings were categorized in 84,000 bundles. Matter of fact, you see a lot of those little packages in the front. Those are all teachings, little packages. That's 84,000 of them. Okay? And then they were then taken and categorized into three bundles. First one was discipline. It's mostly for ordained monks. Right? They just discipline and taking the vows and how to maintain your mind and so forth and precepts and so forth. The second one is called sutra. Sutras are just discourses. Okay? Things that were spoken, things that he spoke about, and what they did was they took expressive or some assertive things and put them into a manual or some sort of a text, and that became what they used the word sutra. S-U-T-R-A. And the third basket was knowledge, just general knowledge. So this is how they divided the 84,000 bundles. And more broadly, then they divided these things into two pieces, what they call the universal vehicle and the individual vehicle. So I know for people who have not taken this program, this is foreign to you. Buddhism has two concepts. One is called the Hinayana, which is the lower vehicle, which we'll talk about later, and the Mahayana, which is considered a larger vehicle. That's all you need to know right now. That things were divided and subdivided so they could be organized. Okay? So, the universal vehicle falls into the family of great compassion. Okay? And the goal is to make all living beings happy. You need to become altruistic to make sure all sentient beings get enlightened. So you need to develop compassion for yourself first and then for others. That's how they look at it. And remember, whenever you do it for others, you're putting yourself later. Yourself is not involved. You're doing it for others. So it's really a very big vehicle. It's very difficult for a lot of people even to fathom. But you need to start slowly. But you're always thinking about how you can make, you know, how can you develop what is called bodhicitta. A mind that is always trying to think of other sentient beings, a wish to make them enlightened. Okay? And so this was Buddha's teaching. And for individual vehicle, it is also a valid, and believe me, this is not one is better than the other. Not true. You must learn both. Okay? And the individual vehicle is more for an individual that is tired of samsara, this cyclic existence, and just wants himself or herself to be liberated. So it's self-oriented a little bit. Whereas the larger vehicle is global, universal. It doesn't matter who you are. you want to generate that wonderful feeling for them to help others. Even if you become a Buddha, you want to come back and help others reach enlightenment. So it's a whole other concept there. Okay? So let's see. Now we're talking about emptiness a little bit. So you'll hear these words, emptiness. Then another word, selflessness. Then you will hear the word ultimate truth. Then you'll hear the word sunyata. Then you will hear the word emptiness. And then, of course, in Chinese they have a word, in Vietnamese they have a word, different words meaning the same thing. I personally find that for this course we'll intermingle few depending on what we are reading, but the selflessness makes more sense for purposes in English. The minute you say the word empty, the mind goes to something that is not there, is empty of something. So you think of a box with nothing in it. Right? That's where our mind goes. So I don't want you to think in those terms right now. Just know that this concept that we are going to talk about is selflessness. Okay? And we'll discuss that why. So, a little bit of background. In Buddha's time, a lot of these thought patterns already existed. A lot of traditions existed that talked about liberation already. If you go back to the old Indian ancient text of Vedas and stuff, they talked about liberation, they talked about ethics, they talked about moksha, they talked about all of these things existed already. So what's new about this? If you can really want to really... So here's what Buddha was a real... I call it a paradigm shift. He was a revolutionary. He challenged some of these things and he introduced the concept of selflessness. Just right now, we'll get into it. Just know that that contradicts the fact that many people believe there is something that goes on or something that goes to the absolute, there's something that moves on, somebody creates you. All of these things are already there in many traditions. None of them are wrong. If you like that, if it's that your faith and that what makes you a compassionate human being, wonderful. But Buddha is saying there is no such thing. It's all here. Is how you see things, how you develop your own mind, and how things happen. And it's a radical change. But it makes it tastier because then it starts to make sense when you contemplate what is karma, cause and effect, how does that work? What is gross impermanence? Why things are changing all the time? You know, they say the minute you're born, you're already dying. Right? Every moment. You just sat here and listened to me for 5 minutes. Your blood cells have changed. Your skin has changed. You have aged 5 more minutes. Right? You don't see those things, but you're consistently changing. This floor is changing. This wall is changing. Nothing is static. It just appears that way. So, he introduced this concept that just opens up a whole nother area of wow, you know. So then you can start to see a different perspective. Okay? So far, so good. Not losing a lot of people, right? Okay, just want to keep it a little on the lower side here. Okay, we use gross permanence, interdependence. These are words that we use all the time. And as we go into this a little bit more, some of it will start to make sense. Okay? So just have a little patience with that. Okay, and it's also important that when you understand the ultimate goal and how we grasp onto things as a human, that when you're dying, what happens? You grasp, you crave. I don't want to go, you know. And his way of thinking will show you when we go a little further that's so easy to let go. It's so easy to let go. And we'll tell you why. So, and then if you look at you need to also know the individual vehicle that we talked about, there are two vehicles, a lower scope and a higher scope. But you need to kind of graduate from the lower scope in order to even get to the higher scope. And one thing very important is, it describes the realization, how people or beings are bound by cyclic existence. How we are bound by cyclic existence. So let's talk about that a little bit. So it says here, through ignorance, we are engaged in actions. Starts with the word ignorance. I want you to keep that word in back of your mind or write it down. Probably one of the most important word today you will walk away with is the word ignorance, believe it or not. Okay, we'll define what is ignorance. And so because of ignorance, and so you'll have to know what is later on what is ignorance, we are engaged in actions. And from those actions, some awareness or consciousness arises. Just take it right now and we'll break it into pieces here. And then from that consciousness, name and form is given. So when somebody comes, they are neutral, they'll even think about a little baby, sperm and egg getting together, nothing, the life is already there, takes birth. We give them a name. We recognize a boy, girl, whatever, right? And that name, and all of a sudden, now that name and form is something that we recognize as that. And then from name, senses form. Oh, he's handsome, his hands, his legs, his senses start to work. And from those senses, you have make contact. So all the touch, smell, hearing, listening, all that starts. Sense objects. Then feeling arises. Oh, I like it. I don't like it. It's too loud. It's too soft. We start feelings arise. And those from feeling, cravings. I like this more. I don't like that. Right? So the craving comes in. After craving, you grasp. I want it. You know, think about going to the mall. You plan something and you wind up buying three things that you don't need, but it's because it's always in your head. Right? So then craving arises. And then after craving, what happens? You crave for human birth. You want to hold on to this. And so as you crave for the birth, what happens? You're born again. Okay? And you're born again. Then what happens once you're born? You age, you get sick, and you die again. So when we talk about cyclic existence, it's important to know that this is the cycle we are in all the time. Okay? And this is why sometimes Buddhism, what did the First Noble Truth says? Buddha said that there is dukkha or suffering, and it's caused by certain reasons, right? There are causes for it. And here he's telling you that this is a realization that he had, that these are called the 12 links. Very important to know. You know, I have an acronym for it. I've kind of created this ICC name, Inform Six Senses, then CEFE, and like I just don't remember, but then it starts to come that it starts with ignorance. From ignorance to karma, compositional actions, from that consciousness, name and form, from their six senses, and then contact, then feeling, then craving, then becoming something, then again, then you have birth, and then death cycle starts again. So you got to know that. Yeah. When you recognize that, and Sutra goes on to say that with cessation of ignorance, then there is no actions. And so all of those goes into negative. Without actions, there is no consciousness. Without consciousness, there is no name and form. Everything ceases. So it's important to know the both sides of the coin. This happens, and you can stop it. So these are called the dependent links, 12 dependent links, to see the whole cyclic existence. Okay? And remember, we talked about craving and grasping a little bit in an example for them all. But that's what happens when we are dying. When we are ready to go, we can learn all of these things intellectually. But reality is, there's something in the back says, I don't want to die. And then you grasp. And that causes, that little seed of so strong grasping causes that next birth. Not necessarily human, according to Buddhism. It's just life, period. So then once you're reborn, it's too late to avoid suffering, birth and death, right? It's too late. It's like when you're sitting in a dentist chair and you're already down and laying down, then it says, oh, I should have flossed today. Too late. You're in there right now. So all you can do is do certain things now so you can improve your next existence or next life. And this is really an amazing way that it takes you, walks you right through step by step, and we still haven't really touched emptiness. I want to set a fundamental base, and I think we can talk about emptiness, and a lot of the readings you'll see, they go through the same point in with different angles to make sure you understand, right? But in the end, it comes down to these few fundamental things that we need to know. So, and also let me define before we go, you'll hear this word called wisdom. you know, even this whole subject matter, wisdom of emptiness, word wisdom. You know, so we need to think, if you lay back and say, what is wisdom? Intelligence, kind of logic, what is wisdom? And typical English dictionary meaning is a mental event that is able to discriminate between what is and what is not. Okay? Simple thing. And we're going to find out in when you go into emptiness what is and what is not. So I'm leading you to that. But I thought that for this first class, we are still questioning what is this all about and what am I going to get out of it and what's the ultimate goal here? What's the point? It's funny, I was talking to Patty and she says, "Oh, this is great, but what's the point?" And I told Aaron this morning, I said, "I got to get that answer." Because, you know, we come to the class and we go through all this, okay, I hear Nagarjuna, Buddha, teaching, and this word emptiness. What the heck are you talking about? And what is it? Why is it important to me? So let's set a little baseline so I can lead you to that. Okay? So let's talk about, before we even get into emptiness, I was reading, this is very powerful books. If you go out there, you'll see he has a series of books. His Geshe Tashi Sering. He's recently going to be appointed, or is appointed by Holiness as an abbot for Sarah J. And he's written these two books. And before I even got to emptiness, I got to this book, and it's called The Relative Truth and the Ultimate Truth. Okay? And so we're going to touch that right now. What is all that? Okay? So I want to give him credit for that. And relative truth and ultimate truth, also referred to in your reading as the two truths. So just know it's the same thing. Okay, and it describes that how hard we work and often struggle to see how we mismatch between reality of how things exist and how we perceive it exists. So the two things is we fail to see how reality exists and how we perceive it exists. Okay, and so the relative truth is also called conventional truth. Ultimate truth is also known as ultimate truth. It's just all interchangeable names. Just know conventional is here, and ultimate we're going to get into. Ultimate truth is also same thing as emptiness. That is the ultimate truth. Okay, so if you see how these two levels, conventional ultimate reality, are intertwined, it can bring so much richness to our lives. It can take us out of so many problems. And it's amazing to see how they actually work together. So on the conventional level, right now, our lives share joy, fulfillment, pain, suffering, enjoyment. All of those things are happening, right, in our lives. Birthday party, Christmas party, somebody passes away, somebody's sick. All of those things are happening every day. And these are all tied together. All these events are tied together in a chain of this cause and event. So you react to something, you say something, so you say, somebody, have a great day. The guy feels a little good, and he goes and tells another person, have a good day, or he just smiles. So that's a chain reaction. Or somebody insults you today, and you know, for no reason. Something gets hurt in there, we don't know what it is, but it certainly feels painful. And then you're in a bad mood, maybe. You go home and you yell at your partner. For no reason, you know. And so the chain of event of this is called cause and effect. It's a karma in works. You know, some action takes place, and there's a cause for it, there's an effect at the end. So this is what conventional reality is all about. It keeps on going, and then we perceive it. The funny thing is, we become skillful at it. It's real. So let's not talk about this word. When I use the word emptiness, people think, oh, so nothing exists, none of that. We're gonna put that to rest in a minute. But understand that this conventional reality does exist. It's happening to you. It happens to your friends. You see with your relatives. You know, they all get up. We all have sometimes coffee, tea, something. We watch TV. We go to work. Sometimes painful, sometimes nice. Good to have a paycheck. All of those things happen, right? That's conventional reality. However, all this is real. And then what we do, we develop skills to manipulate that situation to make us feel calm and happy. We find out ways what to do, when to take a break, when to take a vacation, when not to say something. We're manipulating the situation so that you can buy yourself a little peace, a little calm. So again, cause and effect. You're manipulating a situation that already is a perceived situation, and then your mind is still keeps on working. It's constantly doing that. If I go to sleep at 8 o'clock, I can get up at 5:30, maybe I'll go to work, and maybe I'll be 5 minutes here. You're always working in your brain, conventional reality. Okay? But to be effective, and it can also cause a lot of pain, right? Look at the problems it creates, the headaches, the fights, the partnership breakups, and so goes on. Lost the house, bought a house, too expensive, things go on. Good, bad, and ugly, right? But to really understand the situation of how we live in conventional reality, you need to get at this deeper level where there is no diversity, there is no discrimination, okay? There is something else that kind of puts everything in that same taste. And that's called the ultimate truth. And we're going to take it a little further. So, and it says to even come to a fundamental understanding of what that ultimate truth is, believe me, it is very beneficial. You don't need to know everything. Even to get a glimpse of what it is extremely beneficial. And so, and it will help you once you understand the ultimate truth, when you understand the fundamental reason why all of these things take place. If you can manage at a deeper level, a lot of these things subside. You manage it much better. You don't get into the drama. Okay, and we're going to get into that a little bit. So this two truths, at least for right now, is a vital part of our spiritual journey that we must all undertake to control this pain and confusion in the world. Okay, and this entire Buddhist practice, if you were to say, is based on these things. The ultimate truth and the relative truth. Okay? So you will also hear the word of our teachers talk about that to develop both our emotional and compassionate side and of our logical side. You hear the words bodhicitta. We talked about Mahayana. We want to develop compassion for everyone to become liberated. Okay? That's managing what they call the practice side of the world. As you live in this conventional reality, you want to become virtuous, so your causes and conditions are virtuous, so that you can have a better life. So it's a beautiful cycle. So you want to develop that emotional and that conventional life. And so that is what they call method, M-E-T-H-O-D, method. You'll hear in Buddhism method and, what is that? Wisdom. You hear this, these are the two wings. In order to fly, you need both. So what I would like to say is that to understand this, a little long view is needed. You're not going to walk out of this class. It would be wonderful if you could all walk out and be liberated. But the truth is, it takes time to understand these things. There are a lot of words in this, and there are very deep concepts in it. And there are right now already arguments in your back of your head saying, well, what about this? And what about that? That's going on right now. You know? So that's fine, and you need to contemplate on it. You need to think about that very deeply. Okay? So then the question comes up, then why do we make mistakes? Okay? And the reason we suffer, so we're talking about the ultimate truth a little bit here. The reason we suffer is we fail to see how things exist. We fail to see how humans exist, the events, the people, things, objects, whatever. We just don't understand how they are. In reality, you might be an engineer thinking sheet wall, I see a tile, I see a cushion, I see a table. There's a little more deeper meaning than this here. All this is misunderstood at a very subtle level. And so here's the key word, that the gap between how you see reality and how the conventional reality is. What is the true reality and the conventional reality, how we perceive it? That little gap is called ignorance, not knowing what the true way things exist. That is ignorance. Not knowing how the reality in nature exists. Okay, they use the word ignorance, not knowing the truth. Here's Dalai Lama said something. I wrote it down, so I'm just going to read it here. He's saying, for our thoughts, it's very counterproductive to have bad emotions. Once generated, they harm us both superficially and deeply, and it's an endless struggle. Knowing the true nature of things, then you can undercut all afflictive emotions. You said that. So the more accurate our vision of reality is, the more informed our judgments will be, and therefore fewer mistakes you will make. This is not an abstract philosophy or an irrelevant mind game. You need to check it out. This is vital to have happiness. How things exist. Okay? Understanding emptiness or the ultimate truth is not easy. It takes a little time. And His Holiness even says that this was a major aspect of his study when he was 16. Only now he's beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But fortunately, we don't need, like I said, full understanding of this. Even a little glimpse. And here's the supporting stanza from Arya Deva, one of the names I mentioned. It says here in his 400 stanza writing, even those with few merits have no doubts about this emptiness. Even those who still have their doubts will tear cyclic samsara to tatters. Geshe La even says to us all the time, just a little glimpse, you are already on your way. You're moving towards understanding how things are. If you get too much into this drama in conventional life, you need to just understand how things are. So we're going to get into that. And let me just rehash some things we mentioned in motivation. So I know this is not an easy subject for a lot of the newcomers, but just listen. Maybe do some reading. Okay? Keep some sort of a perseverance to understand what this whole thing is about. And contemplate, and then we'll do some meditation. Hopefully it will help you understand and make it more clear. Any questions so far? Anything I said that was a little too off or didn't understand or didn't connect with you? So just a quick note. We talked about the two wings. We need to develop in this life, while we have life, method, compassion, kindness, and need to have the logic side to understand the way things exist. We know conventionally things do exist. However, we don't understand how they truly exist. We kind of perceive from our mind. We see the colors and the places and the homes and he said, she said, all that, right? We kind of make it up and we make drama over drama over drama, layer over layer, and we think that's the way it is. Okay? And we talked about the 12 links, how things come into cyclic existence. Starts with the word ignorance. And ignorance is what? That mind that does not understand the true reality, the true nature of things. And so we need to ponder. And that's why we're going to learn some emptiness. And the word emptiness, sunyata, selflessness, identityless, all these words are same. Ultimate truth. Okay, so we're going to talk about something called Heart Sutra. Probably the mother of all sutras or discourses. It's called the Heart Sutra. The Sanskrit word for that, it comes from the book of Prajna Paramita, and all that means. Prajna means wisdom, and Paramita means perfection. So it's a perfection of wisdom. And if the wisdom is to understand the ultimate nature, this is the sutra that tells you about it. In there, in a bunch of these little perfection sutras, is a major one, the Heart Sutra. And it is the essence of all of those sutras. Okay? Just so you need to, just a little historical background on that. And it is the essence of Buddha's teaching. So his teaching on the perfection of wisdom was in 100,000 verses when he taught this. Then there's another teaching where he says the same thing in 25,000 verses. Then later on there's another teaching with 8,000 verses. And some say these are separate teachings, and some said it depended, he elaborated based on the people he was in front of at the time, depending on the situation. Okay? That's now condensed into a very short form called Heart Sutra. Okay. And there are many other sutras. So there's a question that there's another one called the Diamond Cutter. These are all perfection of wisdom sutras. But the one that is like given the mother of all is the Heart Sutra. It's the essence from the heart of Buddha. And so here's what it reads. So it's a conversation going on. There's a place when she said, we're going to go to Rajagira, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit in the class, in one of her tours that she's taking in October, a pilgrimage tour. It's called Rajagira. It's a place, it's called Vulture Mountain, where Buddha is seated. And this is, there's a lot of bodhisattvas, and this is a new word for those people who don't understand, highly attained beings before they become Buddha. The state right before Buddha is called bodhisattva. Anyways, they're all sitting and there's a conversation going on. And through his equipoise and his power, they are in this state, and there's a question and answer going on, and it's confirmed by Buddha himself. So here's the one person, one of the disciple named Shariputra, and the other one is Avalokiteshvara. Shariputra, therefore, because it is just Avalokiteshvara says to Shariputra in part of the conversation, that Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely and dwell in the perfection of wisdom. Another confirmation. We talked about the wisdom, knowing the truth, reality. The mind without obscuration, without fear. And I underline the word fear. I'm going to digress just a little bit. Think about fear. What is fear? What is fear? We go see a movie and what happens? It's jerk like that, don't we?
Thinking of yourself.
Yeah. Something in there says, it shouldn't happen to me. There's something that inside that jerks in the heart, in the body, that big eye in you. Oh, what happened to me? Or there are even people who actually go to really bad places like cemetery and stuff and practice so to bring the fear out so they can recognize what is it. There's practices like that too. The idea is that fear is that false identity of self. Okay? That inside, and we will get into that. Just right now, I just wanted to kind of digress a little bit. So here we go. Therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely and dwell in perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration, without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach an end point of nirvana or liberation. All the Buddhas who dwell in this three times, when they say the word three times, past, present, and future. Okay, Buddhas that dwell in the three times. Also completely awakened to unsurpassable, perfect, and complete enlightenment in reliance upon perfection of wisdom. So to become Buddha, you need to understand and get perfection of the wisdom. You need to understand how things exist. Okay? So far, so good. If I'm losing you, let me know. Okay, I want to keep it a little simple, but these are some important pieces I got to go through. So in scheme of things here, it's essential to develop wisdom to achieve liberation and supreme enlightenment. The Heart Sutra also says, so it's a mantra. This entire write-up is called a mantra, but it's unlike this one-liner mantra. It's a whole, like, 2 pages worth of writing. And mantra, even the word, when you say mantras, they think it's some esoteric, this yoga stuff. It's not. Man means mind. And tra means to protect. One that protects your mind. In any tradition, if you do prayer repetitiously, you're not thinking about something else. So it protects your mind. Right? So when you repeat something meaningful to you, and you start to understand the meaning, after a while you lose the vocabulary and consonants, and then the meaning starts to gel with you of what you're saying, and it becomes part of your thinking, it becomes part of your seed, and so it protects you from thinking and wandering somewhere else. So just think about it when you are meditating, or when you're doing a prayer, or whatever you're doing, when it is natural and it comes, there's a connection made within you. It's all about for your mind. So mantra, very important word. So, Heart Sutra continues, this mantra of knowledge, the unsurpassed protection for the mind, the protection of the mind equal to the unequaled supreme, the protection of the mind that is that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as the truth, since it is not false. This protection of the mind, the mantra for protection of wisdom, is declared. And then he gives you a one-liner mantra that encompasses all of the entire Heart Sutra. And the mantra goes, Tayata Gate Gate Paragate Parasamagate Bodhisoha. You got to think about this. Tayata, meaning thus it is said. Gate Gate, Sanskrit word, go. Paragate, go beyond. Parasamagate, go utterly beyond. Hail to that. That's the way it is. You can also translate paragate means going to the other shore. And what that really means sometimes is we are in this conventional reality. When you want to get liberated, you are going beyond to the other shore. And you want to go even beyond that so that you can become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And in this one line, it says, Tayata, thus it is said, Gate Gate, Paragate, Parasamagate, Bodhisoha. Wonderful one-liner, not 10,000 verses. Okay? I was to say the same thing. I wrote it down here that this was explaining 100,000 verses, not even 10,000. And you could also express this in a small little mantra. And there's another sidetrack here about that. Even syllables in Sanskrit and Tibetan and all that, there's always this seed syllable that everything manifests from. And they just, as a interesting piece, they talk about the letter A or A, pronounced A. So in a lot of the other many ancient languages, you don't have, like we have here, A, B, C, D. They have a K, K, G. But you look at the end, it ends in an A sound. K. It's a K plus A. Ka, ka, ba, ba, all A sounds. And then it goes to say, just that A kind of manipulates entire consonants. It's the same way when you sit in a hot tub and say, ah, you have an A sound in it. It kind of contemplates all of those things. I feel good, this is nice, this is warm, how wonderful it is, my free time, all that, in that little ah. It's a kind of thing like that. So it's going to show that, it's basically trying to show you that sometimes a lot of large things are boiled down to some seed things, but it creates a larger meaning. You just have to look into it. That's just a side thing. So let's talk about, a lot of the Shakyamuni Buddha's disciples then passed on some of these teachings to a lot of the other students. And so one major one that we need to talk about is Nagarjuna, the great master. It's already 12 after 8. The first 15 minutes, I'm going to go through this. We will pick it up at some point so we can finish everything that I want to talk about. But we're going to, in about 5 or 10 minutes, go do at least one nice meditation at the end, if not two, okay? So if you don't mind. So just quickly about Nagarjuna, that he was in 2nd century known for upholding the teachings of the perfection of wisdom, the Heart Sutra we talked about, but all perfection of wisdom. And he's a champion of what they call the middle way. And in Buddhism, there are four schools. We're not going to get into that this time. But the one that we ascribe to and is well is well established in Mahayana tradition is the middle way school. Okay, and when we talk about middle way, you don't want to think about empty to become nihilistic, like nothing is there, and you don't want to make everything concrete and it exists. There's somewhere in the middle, and it's called the centrist view. And so Nagarjuna wrote a lot about that. He lived in South India. He was going to die, but his parents did some lot of prostrations and went to a monastery and had the monks do some special thing. In the end, he lived for a long time, became the abbot of Nalanda, where tens and thousands of people debated this subject matter, and that he wrote some fantastic books about the perfection of wisdom. He is known, there's legends about him getting the sutras from this particular place, and there's a legend, I don't know, but in Nepal apparently there's a place where you can go into this temple called Swambhunath, a monkey temple, and there's a cave underneath it. He met with some mer people, and they said they were holding this perfection of wisdom for him. It's just trying to show that he was meant to have this information to then offer it to us. And so, very important name to know, Nagarjuna. Okay? And in his book, in his verse, and of course this, everything has this language, Madhya, Maka, Avatara, and all this. Madhya, the word Madhya is very common, means the middle. Madhya means middle. So we always think in the centrist way or the middle way, not nihilistic, and not everything is concrete, so we are called the centrist, so it's Madhya. Okay? And in his root wisdom book of fundamental wisdom of the middle way, he says, I prostrate to perfect Buddha, the best of teachers, who taught that whatever is dependently arisen is unceasing, unborn, unannihilated, not permanent, not coming, not going, without distinction, without identity, and free from conceptual distinction. So for him, the one side of the coin is dependent arising, and the other side is emptiness. So I'll just give you a brief understanding of what is dependent arising. Okay, for those that are new, most people kind of know that. Everything is dependent arising. Find anything here that is solid existence, that is not already depending on something else. Take human being. Or let's take an easy one, a tree. You see a tree, a solid tree. Nice tree, nice leaves, branches, bark. Beautiful tree. Then you look at, is that a solid tree? Then you find out there are a lot of things going on in that tree. The molecules are moving, the center part is softer, outer side is a little thicker and bark. But then you find out that tree is taking a lot of the minerals and vitamins and so from the ground, from the earth. At some point before the tree became, it was a seedling. And light, right causes and conditions had to be there, sunlight and the water for that seed to even blossom. Right? That seed came from a fruit of another tree. Okay? That tree came, it goes on and on and on and on and on. Every moment, there's nothing. You need oxygen right now. There's oxygen, carbon dioxide, nitrogen in the air that you need. You are also dependent arising. Your skin cells are changing. You need nutrition to live. I mean, there's always water. You need water. Your cells are being born and dying. Everything is dependent arising. Nothing is concretely as we see it is. Just have to chew this for a while. You'll need to contemplate on that. That's why we call it dependent arising. And that's why nothing is truly born, unborn, and unannihilated. It continues through impermanence. Continuous movement of this phenomena is interdependence and continues to change. We grasp onto this mindset with the 12 links that I exist. We are not saying that you're not here right now, and you don't, but the way you exist. The interdependence brings you to this point, but you're consistently changing. It is not a solid I, you know. So this is a concept that will take a little while. It's a little dense. It will take a little time to swallow, but we'll take it slowly at a time with some examples. Okay, we'll continue with, even in the next class, we'll continue with some of these examples. But I want you to understand that when you read these things and when you say, as we understand, things are interdependent, and we must understand that they are all empty. And that means empty of solid existence, as we think it is. Emptiness and interdependence are not contradictory. They are essentially the same. This is a very important concept to remember. So, any confusion with what is interdependent or dependent arising and why we use the word? So, remember, our tendency would be to look for examples externally. You look at the trees and the buildings, and yeah, they're all empty. Really, everything is temporary, everything is moving. It includes you. It includes you. And the learned, the scholars, the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas are able to directly perceive that at all times. At all times. That's so profound to me when I was reading it, and I read it, I was a little like, what is this? What is this? And then there are some nuggets in there, it's like, oh my goodness. You know, that's mind-blowing to understand how you can see reality in that way. And when you see that, when you understand, even get a glimpse of it, that everything is sort of changing, it's impermanent, and it's interdependent on so many things. You wouldn't be there unless your mother was there, father was there. You go on and on and on, how you survive, how the paychecks come, what happens in the house, where the money, it's all interdependence. Everything is moving and changing all the time, including at cellular level. And that's what they mean by the word selfless. And knowing the truth, knowing how things exist. And then, because we, through the 12 links, create this concrete I, then what happens? Oh, I'm hurt. I like it. You know, I was thinking about an example, and I don't want to get into a lot of big examples, a small one. When you are passing by somebody and you meet that person first time, that very first second, what happens when you meet them? It's pretty neutral. You don't know them. Passing by, you meet them, their eyes meet. But in few seconds, what happens? Oh, what is he wearing? What does he look like? Oh, he has a beard. Oh, he looks different. All of a sudden, our mind immediately goes on to contact, feel, perceive, and starts to make a story out of which you don't even know. And if that person is pleasant to you, oh, he's a nice guy. And if you were to say event like this to you, you would say, what a stupid guy. You create these pictures in your mind immediately. The fact is, he's just doing, he or she is doing whatever their causes and conditions are making them happen. But if you knew how things really are, you would not take it too personal. Think about it for a second. When you just kind of grasp that and know how things are, and each person has causes and conditions, they're all interdependent, they're moving on to their own little cycle. I'm doing my own thing, it's going around. Really, there's no I. There is an I, postulated I. So when I say I'm hungry, okay, it's a different I. We're talking about just for language purposes. I sit. If I was solid, Hemant would get up, but I would be sitting. So it's not solid. But we have to use the word, I eat, I'm hungry, I'm going. It's a little different in that way. But we are talking about something that happens in there that is solid when you have that fear. When you're about to fall down and you don't want to fall down, you're going to, something happens in there. We're going to investigate that I a little bit more. We're going to look for it. We'll do some meditations in session 2 and 3 where we're going to actually understand where is that I. Let's find it. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay, so you got a little glimpse on, there are some other little small stories I have. I'll cover it up, not much to go further, and we'll talk about a little more some of these other names that you need to be familiar with. But for sake of time, it's 8:22. I really do want to do a little meditation. And the reason for this, that two little small, we're going to continue from one calm abiding. I'm going to lead you to the next one. If it is 8:30 and you have to go, feel free to get up and go. Don't worry. But if you can sit for a few more minutes and go through this meditation, it will be good for your mind. Okay, so just a little preface. This meditation is on the value of lineage and the motivation of studying. And the reason for this meditation is for you, when you go today, don't let this die. You know, don't use this word, okay, we went through this Buddhist class, but let's get to reality. No, reality, not reality. So kind of just think about those words. Think about the word ignorance. Think about the word method and wisdom. Think about how these things are. What is that Heart Sutra? And understand the word ignorance and how we perceive things. Contemplate that. Even go out when you go home today, look at a tree and kind of look at it and see. Is it a solid tree? Then you say, yeah, I feel it. But then you find out there is a treeness in that. And you find out it's just different parts that we label tree. But tree itself is a changing phenomena. Okay, just that's it. So this is going to help you understand why you should study. And then we're going to do a calm abiding. But more than a calm abiding, it's to learn how to concentrate so that you can keep some of these things that we talked about in your mind. Because your mind is going to wander off, gets tired after 1.5 hours of this, reading some of these things. It's like, okay, I need a little break. Right? But this will allow you to keep some of those things going with you. So with that said, check your posture. Make sure your spine is straight, shoulders are relaxed, mouth and jaw relaxed. And take a deep breath in and out, allowing yourself to become completely aware of your weight, of your body sitting in a cushion or on a chair. Recognize that the time you have to meditate is extremely small. And so give yourself permission to let go of the past and future and remain completely present for the cessation, for this session of meditation. So count 21 cycles of natural breath while paying special attention to the sensation of the breath. Coming in, going out of your nostril. So set your motivation for the session by recognizing the innate wish for happiness that is shared by yourself and others. Acknowledge your deep longing to not only stop the suffering of yourself and attain personal peace, but also your sincere wish to stop the suffering of others. Then, with the mind taking responsibility to actually do this, generate the mind of bodhicitta, the wish to attain perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all. Therefore, I am going to do this meditation. Think like this. So review the teachings to which you have just listened. The subject was a value of lineage and teachers in general. How does this relate to you? Reflect on your personal goals for life. Where do liberation and omniscience fit in? There could be people whose goals for this life are not defined in terms of liberation and enlightenment. See if you can identify your innate wish for happiness. A happiness that never ends. Perfect peace. This is just another term for the wish for liberation, for freedom. See if you can identify your sincere wish to help others and your wish for a greater wisdom and ability in order to be able to help them in a lasting way. This is a wish for enlightenment. What would you do with a viable means to cessation of suffering? You'd take it, wouldn't you? Well, the swallowing of this pill is in listening intently, keeping your minds open, allowing ideas to resonate within you, capturing those ideas and not forgetting them, following the line of thought presented by the teacher, but also being aware of the different ideas that arise within you as you listen. So take time to contemplate all of what you could remember from what has been taught. By means of that, some understanding begins to form. As the understanding forms, you can immerse yourself in the understanding so that it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. And that's the way you take this pill. What if you had a pill that would keep you young forever? That would eliminate arthritis? That would keep your veins and arteries unclogged? That would make you feel young and light? Make your mind clear with memory like a steel trap. Won't you take that pill? This is much better than such pill. Just think of the qualities of the Buddha. This pill gets you those qualities. Contemplate these things until great enthusiasm and appreciation for this opportunity to study and meditate on emptiness arises. And then hold that experience. Continue like this just for a few more minutes, or until you feel there is nothing that will keep you from generating this wisdom within your mind. In your own way, for this meditation, you can dedicate your efforts that you may soon realize your optimum potential and become a perfect guide to lead others to actualize their potential as well. We're going to get into a little bit of cultivating concentration. And during this meditation, we will cultivate concentration. We need very good concentration to cultivate knowledge of emptiness, especially the direct experience of it. You may have noticed that from time to time, when listening to the teachings, you had a fleeting glimpses of what was being spoken. We need to hold such understanding and to expand it. If it is fleeting, it will have little impact on us. It may not even be sufficient to make us doubt that there is something wrong with our ordinary experience. By developing concentration, when moments of insight arise, we will be able to sustain them for longer and longer periods of time, allowing us to cultivate the mind of wisdom. When wisdom grows strongly enough within our minds, ignorance is easily defeated, and the liberation and enlightenment are close at hand. So again, just watch your posture, watch your breathing, without distraction. Just watch your belly rising and falling. Keep your focus there. You do not need to think a lot about the breath. Do not conceptualize about the oxygen in the air, passing through the tissues of the lung into the blood and all that. Just take a note of the fact that you are breathing. And do not let your mind stray from that. Also, be as attentive as you are capable of. Like when you must carry a full mug of coffee across the living room without spilling a drop. Maintain this level of attentiveness without loosening your hold on it. Even when you forget what you're doing, immediately upon realizing this, bring your attention back to watching the breath. This exercises the power of memory. You must recall what you are supposed to be doing during this meditation session. Your first goal is to minimize the time you have forgotten what you're supposed to do. Your power of memory will improve as you use it. And eventually, you will be able to sustain mindfulness of breath for an entire session. Of course, it helps your sessions are short at first. Your next goal is to notice when your mind is about to wander. You will need to exercise vigilance by checking time to time if your mind is getting agitated and inclined towards leaving the task of watching the breath. Immediately upon spotting this, you must counter this inclination with discipline. One way to do so is by recalling that although breathing is not very interesting, the concentration that you're developing will enable you to develop your knowledge and experience of emptiness. And the next goal before you is to not let your vigilance, that is watchful of wandering and weakening of attention, to itself become distraction from watching your breath. This requires an evaluation of whether you are beyond these dangers and if you are about to retire your vigilance. At this time, at this stage, you just need to accustom yourself with the object of meditation, in our case, watching the breath. Just for dedication, we dedicate your efforts that you may soon realize your optimum potential and become a perfect guide to lead others to actualize their potential as well. Thank you. When you go home today, you know, just kind of just think about what was being said. And like I told you what to read, really, like, get into it. Question it. Buddha says, don't take it for granted just because I said it. Investigate it. Look at logic. You've taken sciences before. You've gone to school. You have logical arguments. Check it out. Sense it. Question it. And it will certainly make a big difference in your life. So I hope this first session was a little bit helpful. We're going to get into a little deeper next time. So, you know, we're going to get into Heart Sutra more. I'm going to talk a little bit about other lineage, Master Tsongkhapa, and some of the things that he's learned and how some of these monasteries are still teaching the same thing, some of those things. We will even talk about a little bit about the three aspects of the path and three aspects of the path, and those are renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness, and why, even though you have one and two, the way to really get there is to understand how reality exists, the emptiness. So thank you for your time. I know I kept you a few minutes longer. Thank you. We will get together outside for a few minutes. If you have any personal questions or still feeling like what was all that about, I'll be more than happy to talk with you.